I treat it like everyone should care about security like they should care about their health. Just like whether it's mental health, physical health, anything. It's something that needs to be not just, oh, I come to this company and security is a thing that I have to deal with. It's like, no, I need to care about security from a sense of even my own personal security all the way down to the company's security, et cetera.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders podcast. Every Friday, Lima Charlie hosts Defender Fridays, a 30-minute live fireside chat hosted by our founder, Maxime Lamothe-Brossard, who sits down with an industry expert and hands-on practitioner for an unfiltered conversation on a topic related to cybersecurity defense. These chats are so insightful, it made sense to share them on the podcast as well, 1 week after they originally aired. If you'd like to join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. And a reminder, this podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for security operations where everything is built API first. You can think of it as a backend for your MSSP that enables you to scale with confidence as your business grows. You can get started today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it.
Cool. Well, let's get started. Welcome to Defender Fridays. My usual pitch for everybody is, you know, we get to talk to all kinds of cool people in the industry, cybersecurity, defensive. There's just so many different things to be talked about there. So we like to bring folks in, kind of extend that circle. This is not a slides kind of discussion, but rather really just like a discussion. Feel free to jump in the chat or join us and just let's talk about interesting things and learn about new things. And I feel like today that fits exactly that because I know people, but I feel like I don't know people plus security quite as much. And so we've got Brandon with us. Hey, Brandon, do you want to maybe do a quick intro about yourself?
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Maxim. Hey, everyone. Yeah, I'm Brandon Min, the co-founder and CEO of Herd Security. The word herd security literally comes from helping organizations build herd immunity against cyber attacks. So that's I've come from a background of deep human factors based science for a while and transitioned that into cybersecurity when I started working at Duo early on in my career. Was lucky enough to work alongside Ken Weston, who's here also at another company before. And so he's been a great friend and mentor as I've been launching Herd in the last couple of years. So yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. Awesome. No, super happy to learn about that. I think it's a topic that's often kind of discussed, but like in a pretty shallow way. So I feel like I'm probably going to learn a bunch of things about it. But how did you, what was that, like, what led you into thinking about like the human aspect you mentioned, that's kind of like your background, but I feel like there must have been some like earlier aha moment, and in hindsight you can kind of like string together and you're like, okay, like this is how I got to think about it this way.
Yeah. I wish it was a more complicated story, but it was a funny but simple story. So we when I started working at Duo, it was the first time I had been dealing directly with working directly for a cybersecurity specific company. And so when I got there, I was helping out with MFA deployments across the organization. So you obviously see firsthand how are people talking about or how are people using security or understanding it to their usage. So I had helped a company with the deployment. And like 2 days later, I went to dinner with a friend of mine, and I won't name names because I'll get embarrassed by it. But we were sitting at the table, and he got a Duo push notification while we were sitting at the table, and his phone's out, whatever. And he just looked at it, hit accept, and then just dropped his phone. And I just kept talking. And it literally stopped. And I was like, dude, do you know what you just did? And he's like, what? And I'm like, the thing on your phone, you just pushed. And he's like, oh yeah, do you know this app? This is like some stupid thing we have to do for work now. And I was like, Sure. Dude. And I was like, well, first of all, I work for that company. So fair enough. But then I was like, you literally, it was like somebody just rang your doorbell at your house and you just said, okay, I'm going to push open the door. And he goes, and he had no idea. And it was such an interesting piece that it was mind-boggling to me that nobody, I sat there and explained it to him for like 10 minutes. And eventually he was like, oh, I wish somebody had told me that. Nobody in the organization had given me any context to what this is. They just made me use it. And I that was actually one of my earliest memories of like how the merge of humans and security. I mean, it's going to happen in so many different ways. It already happens in so many ways, but especially from a social engineering perspective, it had to become something where the knowledge of for users needed to be better at that point, and the communication needed to be better as well. So that was really what I wouldn't say sparked it, but that's like what I remember from the start of that and everything that has come. If there was one moment I had to pick, it'd be that one. So I think that answers that. Yeah, there you go.
Very cool, very cool. And so is that I'm sorry, I've had a pretty like busy week. Is that the types of use cases that you guys started tackling, or did you go like a different way into into that space?
Directly at Herd, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no. Herd is more of, I mean, it's a little bit of both. So we did a lot of we're a human risk management platform, so that's kind of where it evolved into over time. I think when I actually tried to launch in 2020, was it 2020 or 2021? And this was not Herd. I actually tried to launch a different company that was a educational, like a cybersecurity educational app for influencers and or like end consumers, like people, literally. And because I was like, this is something that people should be caring about on a more normal basis. It obviously never took off for a myriad of reasons, but that was kind of the first semblance of like, there's something with humans and security that I need to try. And I don't know exactly what it is. And Massimino, as a founder, is there's some things you just like keep trying and you throw it at a wall. You hope it sticks. That was one, it strike and a miss, or swing and a miss, easy, but it's like, it is what it is, right? I think the thought and the empathy is there, but not the execution in that sense. So fast forward to now, human risk management across the board, especially, and then especially working with we really wanted to optimize like just in time either training or just in time notifications in relation to like real alerts that you're seeing from the SOC. So when I first explained that to somebody, someone thought I was taking the alerts from the SOC and just putting them to the world. And it was like, are you just going to make alert fatigue everyone's problem? I was like, no. We already have phones. That's already enough. But it was more of a, can you take more real context into what somebody's doing, bad actions or someone doing insecure actions, and actually inform them about that in a very, in a positive light. It didn't have to be like, nope, don't do this. And I'm not talking about you click on a phishing simulation and you get a 40-minute video from no before after to watch. It's like it's something that's supposed to be much more not only empathetic but interactive, and also help with almost remediation of those issues, and so that there's a clear reward and mindset of like from the human side, like, oh, I had a problem, I learned about the problem, I actually fixed the problem, and then there's even some recognition that comes back the other way in terms of that. So that's kind of how we that's how we took that concept and turned it into something that's usable today.
Gotcha. So I feel like you just kind of touched on a discussion in cybersecurity that is kind of omnipresent, at least since I started, which is kind of like the philosophical question of should users care? And if so, how? And where's that boundary in security, right? Where we say like, look, that's like a security thing. And not like a normal user thing. What's your kind of view of that landscape? How do you think about the thing as a whole?
Yeah, I started, I mean, and maybe I'm a way further believer in like that everyone should care about security. I treat it like everyone should care about security like they should care about their health. Just like whether it's mental health, physical health, anything. It's something that needs to be not just, oh, I come to this company and security is a thing that I have to deal with. It's like, no, I need to care about security from a sense of even my own personal security all the way down to the company's security, et cetera. And it still is up to the company to really push a joint responsibility feel to it. And that does need to come from the top all the way down. Of course, many organizations fail at that, and that's something we'll learn and hopefully get better at. But I think from a personal standpoint, is it just as important for a single person to learn how to protect themselves online versus how to help protect their organization and be clean on MFA, follow certain procedures, et cetera, with password management, et cetera, just good hygiene for security. So I actually think that the bounds of personal cybersecurity and regular and corporate cybersecurity are kind of merging and getting closer and closer together, just based on how important that's going to be over time. It sounds very people when I start saying that, people think I sound like I'm going for like a Terminator or a maybe not a Terminator. What maybe but maybe more of a cyberpunk thing where people are like, oh, I'm gonna hack chips in your head and so you can start seeing different things. But I'm like, that's usually the pushback I get on that one. But
I'll speak for, I mean, a little bit on the pushback side that humans, if it comes down, if it's gated by humans will fail. Network firewalls are 100% following the rules they are given. Human firewalls are, it depends on the day. I like the idea of some shared responsibility and setting the culture and it being part of the rollout that like you're vouching for this log on. This is, I love the analogy you gave of the doorbell. You wouldn't just hear the doorbell, open the door, not see who's there, and walk away. You should probably be expecting someone before you answer that push notification. But at the same time, as the organization, you cannot accept just blame the human because MFA fatigue will happen. Sorry, there's a little bit of a tier list of different types of MFA, and was this you is way better than no MFA at all. But it is not like U2F level where prove that a person with the access to the device took the thing so much as prove that someone was willing to click yes on a notification.
And no, and you're absolutely right, Jeff. I mean, it's kind of interesting because it's never a problem that's going to completely be solved. But I think we can say that about all cybersecurity. At some point, there's just never anything that like there's always going to be attackers out there. There's always going to be something. I think I said it recent, not on here, but I said it recently at a talk last week. But it was like, if we make something cool, someone will eventually use it for something wrong. And unfortunately, it's just how it is, right? And so on top of that. But to Jeff's point, like you're right, there will always be human error across the board, which is what actually a very interesting part of what I studied in human factors, which is anything from for just context, it's anything from there's many different parts of human factors, but it's basically where are failures of humans in a system that led to either failure or catastrophic disaster, anything from the Fukushima disaster in Japan on the nuclear power site to BP's oil spill at Deepwater Horizon, all the way to how people walk through and flow through like a Disneyland theme park. I love Disneyland. My claim to fame was that was like my senior capstone project in college was literally how do people move through Disneyland in the most efficient way? And it's just understanding the human systems that they create in order to keep people from deviating and going in certain areas. It's very interesting, but I won't get too far into it. So, funny enough, I gave a talk at one of our OWASP, local OWASP chapters last week about this idea that human mistakes, like breaches, are not down to human failure all the time from the human error, because you heard that stat 9 out of 10 breaches happen for the human error, or whatever, start with human error. It's more of 9 out of 10 breaches start with a failure of a human system. So the system was not created in a way for humans to not fail or be foolproof in that
How about
sense. So
9 out of 10
taking
breaches had a human scapegoat from the company because the company did not design security controls
that relied on something other than individual humans.
That's the exact that exactly the same way. Exactly. Yeah, it's like
A little harsher.
I try not to walk up to the CEO or a CISO and say that directly, but you're not wrong. So, but maybe I need to bring you with me, Jeff, and then we'll play a little good cop, bad cop thing.
I will happily be the
But no, and so I think that's where it's really interesting. If you start looking at systems as to a lot of major breaches that got blamed on some type of social engineering, you could look at it and say either anything from as simple as why was there nothing beyond this person clicked on one link and that already led to a complete breach, and there was just nothing else in the system that's foolproof. And I'm like, is that really that human's fault at the end of the day? It's not. So it's not only a single person's responsibility, but almost a joint responsibility to protect, but also to understand across the board. So that's, just to kind of build off of what Jeff's saying there.
What do you think is the what do you think is the biggest gap right now in enabling that for users, right? Because I feel like philosophically, like most of all us are kind of like aligned there. Now, how do we build, like, what's the biggest gap of systems in order to enable the users to make the right decisions and like all of that stuff?
I it could be these are just my hypothesis to this, and this is based on our research, our thought process, and my own understanding of human nature. There could be different things, of course. Everyone's a little bit different. And I think that's the fun thing about the human side of things is everybody is different, and so it's kind of cool to see. I really believe in like a gradual change with comes from consistency of doing something really small. So you could think about it all the way from the sense of if you wanted to build strength, let's just say upper body strength or something like that, and if you told yourself, I'm going to do 100 push-ups every single day, and you've never done a push-up, it's going to be really hard to build a habit to do 100 push-ups every day. People get discouraged, and of course, they usually eventually fall out of it. Where if I said, I'm just going to do one push-up a day, no matter what, when I get an alarm that goes off at a random time every single day, or even like 2 o'clock every single day, just one push-up, there's so much that on a consistent basis is more effective for your brain and for your body to adapt to that than it is to go the other way. So I think another problem with from a security culture standpoint is a lot of people do it from a compliance standpoint, which is not necessarily bad, but so annual security training comes out as just like, oh, this is the only time that you hear from security is when something goes wrong or when annual security training is coming up, and that's it. And we all know those are not the most exciting things in the world. And so getting into a repeated pattern of how can you get a more consistent message out to people and kind of build a muscle around, oh, we're thinking about security or what is security. And so a lot of what we built around, I don't want to just call it just-in-time trainings, but that's like, so basically trainings that we push out through messaging systems across like either Slack or Teams or Discord. That's a huge part of what we do. And then we automate a lot of that, so it's easier to manage for a lot of teams. But it's basically taking concepts that can actually relate to not just the organization, but to individual users and saying, hey, just for today, check out this little message. And this is like, Ken's better at security than I am and will ever be, right? So Ken is going to get a message about something that could be a lot deeper about a more recent attack that he actually wants to learn about versus me. I'm just getting, hey, Brandon, we had a couple of attempts against our MFA recently. That means that people are trying to send fake little prompts around. It's been happening to the company. Just watch out for yourself. You get a fake one. That's it. You don't need to respond to it. You don't need to reply to it. You don't even need to acknowledge it. It's just kind of part of the muscle of seeing it and getting in front. So we start with a seeing, typically for the users that need the most push. And then it leads to when you start kind of building that more than maybe some acknowledgements. It's like it requires them to push one button in those areas. And then that kind of builds a habit more towards, will they try to watch a video that's 30 seconds? Will they try to watch one that's a minute? And we kind of try to keep building those topics and habits. And what we dynamically want to do is relate it to what that person is seeing on a normal basis. So that's where the, I guess, the human risk analysis comes in, not necessarily from a negative standpoint, but from a standpoint of this person uses, salesperson uses X, Y, and Z tool. And so they're going to see fake DocuSign is going to be like a big thing that we're seeing in the industry. So they're going to see it as well. So like we should warn them and tell them about this, give them a quick acknowledgement about it. And so how we believe it comes in the steps of just first seeing and then consistency and then building upon that action of so seeing to acknowledgement to maybe further training and then maybe even eventually to something further than that. We haven't maybe there's sharing with other people or getting in that in sense. And so it's I wouldn't say it's gamified purely in that sense, but it's a habitual lesson that we're trying to get to in terms of building a habit.
Gotcha. So it's not about having a security control that operates with the human. It's more about like helping users think about other security controls and what they might see. It's kind of like detection versus prevention-ish, right? Am I roughly?
That's I think it's close. We do have to put in, like, at the end of the day, we do have to put in controls and things like that for, you know, people are buying the product at the end of the day. So there's some things that, you know, we need to service for needs there, but it's like we have to, it's so it's like a mix. I'm sure you feel that sometimes you need to give a mix of what the people want today versus like what you kind of want them to think more in the future. And so it's a little bit of the two. But yeah, in that sense, you're having a mix of those two things, but it's a lot less of, hey, like, stop, don't do that, versus a, hey, letting you know this is more proactive in this sense. If it does get serious enough, we will say, stop, don't do that, because that is unfortunately
Just
necessary at
saying,
times.
since Maxine, you mentioned the gamification earlier, compared to the costs, sorry, Brandon, of like most MFA projects, a weekly exercise of we're going to pick a random employee via a random application and push a notification that wasn't them. And if they report it, $50 gift card for that employee on the spot. The absolute worst case scenario is you spend 52 times $50 a year for proving that your controls are working, but more likely you build a culture around, yes, sometimes you get notifications that aren't from you, and we should have a process to report that, and sometimes you get money for that.
Yeah, it's good. I really like that personally. And then, but I've run into so many companies that are like, yeah, we don't give money anymore, or we don't do this, we don't do that. And I'm just like, okay, well,
Yeah, I mean,
then we have to come up
I
with
don't
different
really care what
incentives.
the award is, but it's just planning for more than 0 hours of making sure the security control works and we have a process for reporting that people know about is the thing that is the most important to me.
To you, yes. I would, maybe it's a hot take, but it's a great, I like the idea, and I feel like the award is the big thing, right? Because what you don't, I think what you don't want to fall into is, it's like the phishing training, right? Like we send 100 phishing emails, and like every now and then somebody clicks, and like we tell them, hey, you shouldn't click, you should report it. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, but it doesn't appeal to the core human thing. Where if now you say, it's a lottery, and the only way to potentially win that lottery is to actually reason about this push that you got, and like, did I do that? Then I feel like that's kind of a stronger mechanism than just hoping that people care enough that they don't do it. And you know what I mean? Like, it feels like there's a critical difference in there to me.
Yeah, I think I'm sorry, I'm reading some stuff in the chat too. These are but I'm starting to think of like the phishing emails that have worked, and the funniest thing, the phishing emails that worked are the ones around like food. Is like it legitimately I so we've sent some out that are like get a gift card for free burger day at the company. So use this code and click on this for Uber Eats, and you'll go. And like so many people click on that, and I'm like, I'm not gonna lie. If I got a free In-N-Out burger by clicking a link, I might be really tempted to go for that, right? So I was just thinking that through all these emails, but
Hi, this is a phishing email from a ransomware operator. Click here and I'll give you $100 for your working credentials, including MFA. Send that to personal email.
sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah. Like,
Exactly.
wait, you send it to my personal email and you'll make it look like it's a legit phish on the work side? All right. There was the old study about getting people to reveal their password for a candy bar. Now, could have given the wrong password. They weren't trying as a study, but remarkably successful in getting people's passwords for candy bars.
The absolutely most remarkably successful phish I've ever seen done. We did a test that was the ServiceNow ticket approval email because we had like a just click here to approve, and like 89% or something like that, all of them IT managers clicked that phish.
You see, that's interesting and weird in a way, because like right before you said that, my thought was there's such a big difference between a phish, which is, look, email is a communication medium that by definition you're expected to get random stuff from random people. So I, really high rate. Whereas something like a push notification of like, hey, could you like, did you approve this guy doing this thing or something like that? I would have expected to have way lower, success rate. But now you're saying that like a serve at a ServiceNow level, I guess it must have been a pretty convincing, like a very realistic thing that they would have wanted to approve, right?
It's something they get, 10, 15 times a day because they have to approve everything that their team's doing. Like every new change ticket they want to put in has to get approved. But nobody ever read them. Like nobody was actually looking to see what the change was. So just fake text of change and approve.
Interesting. So it's as if the it makes me think that the power in a weird way of having a trusted channel is actually really high, right? Because like the odds of somebody sending it essentially, well, no, you can't go through a Duo and send phishing, right? To click on something else. I don't know. I feel like there's something really interesting in the in those two, the difference between those two flows and how often people click on that.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of habit, kind of like what we were talking about. When you're used to getting this email 10 times a day and you click the approve every time, well, that 11th one, you're not going to read any closer than you read the first 10.
Yeah. And anybody can send you that approval.
Right. Yeah, because that's what it looks like. It's just an email.
I'm just
Email, great.
curious what happens when we give OpenClaw access or skills to use our MFA apps, right? And I could see users doing this, right? Like there's someone's gonna come up with something and like I was kind of half joking in the chat, but kind of curious, Brandon, have you kind of been thinking about that too? Like what does all these AI tools and things like that, how does that kind of play in here?
It sounds a little extra. Something I read as soon as OpenClaw that announced, like we started seeing that, I literally put into our security channel. I was like, and put to the entire company. I was like, nobody's allowed to use this internally. Anyone who does, like, this is against company policy as starting this moment, like immediately. And I was like, I don't know how we're going to detect that, but we're going to start with that at least. It honestly. From we'll just talk not just OpenClaw, but any agentic tools in general with this stuff. I mean, it's crazy what you're seeing from a we see a lot more organizations getting hit by really sophisticated cross-channel phishing now, which are and so not just email, but something where it's I will send an OTP code to Ken and then call him and say, hey, this is IT department, blah blah blah. We've actually been resetting passwords and stuff like that and seen it. Sorry, you got it. We didn't mean to. Do you mind just sending us the OTP? Obviously, Ken would never give that to me, but you know, they had a large organization, that is true. And so we're seeing attacks like because of agents, I think it's just more the speed and the scale of those types of attacks that can happen. I guess sophistication is somewhat there. I'm still a little unconvinced by pure sophistication. Like what Ben was saying about like the ServiceNow kind of click emails, I don't know how sophisticated I would say that actually is. It's just more of like you catch people in a routine that looks similar. But like in terms of the channels you're being hit by and the volume you're getting hit by, I think is much higher from an agentic side. And I think it will get better at learning, understanding, and figuring out a path in if you really were to control it with that. And then on the flip side, from a human risk side, I mean, you're looking at what if people aren't like, I think one of the biggest ones we've come across is, you know, what if people aren't reviewing, actually peer reviewing code anymore? And they're just saying, oh, like an AI is just approving this stuff now. And I'm like, from the supply chain that, I mean, and or software development lifecycle, I'm like, that's a huge problem for us. It's out of compliance for SOC 2 and other areas as well. But how do you actually follow that? It's just, I don't know yet, to be honest with you. But yeah, I think those are my two biggest concerns at the forefront that we've seen.
A lot of really interesting questions are going to be coming up in the next couple of years about all of this. I'm taking out the popcorn. Thank you so much for coming in. If folks want to get in touch with you, is there a better way to do that?
Yeah, I feel bad. I feel weird giving out my personal email, but I can get my email in the chat if anybody wants it. But find me on LinkedIn. I think that's honestly the easiest place. Feel free to connect with me. I'm connected with Ken if you know him, and then I think Max and we're connected. We've met a while back, so in there as well. Send me phishing emails. Send me whatever you got. If anything, we'll take it as samples and put it in our product for other people. So thanks for the ideas.
Awesome, awesome. Have a good weekend, everybody. We'll see you at next Defender Fridays.
And that brings us to the end of another Defender Fridays discussion. Support our show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend. Subscribe or give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening from. If you want to be a part of the conversation and join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you in the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.